This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and joining us is Elise Glink, the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Welcome back, Elise.
Thank you, John. Nice to be here.
Did you go watch Twisters over the weekend?
I didn't have a chance. I was in Quebec City eating poutine.
And do you say Quebec or Quebec?
I should say Quebec.
Yeah, but well, I'm not sure if you should.
My French is high school, and it was many, many years ago.
So what were you doing up there?
Celebrating my birthday.
Wow. So for your birthday, some of us go to the mall. You go to Quebec. Wow. Nicely done. And did you stay overnight? Did you make a weekend out of it?
We did. I was with my sisters and their family, and we had a nice family reunion up there. The weather was beautiful. It's a charming city if you've never been.
Oh, it's beautiful. Well, that's the one with the hotel on the hill there, right?
Yep, the Frontenac.
The Frontenac. And did you stay there?
We did stay there.
And was it terribly expensive?
Well, we had a lot of rooms because it was a nice big family reunion, and so we were able to negotiate a pretty good discount.
Wow.
The nice thing, though, is the dollar is very strong right now against the Canadian dollar, so everything we did was at a 30% discount.
Wow, that's interesting. Still, why Canada? Are you all from that way?
We're not. We just thought it would be an easy place for the folks who are on the East Coast and those of us here in the Midwest to meet at. And unfortunately, my son who lives in San Francisco, he got the short end of the stick and had to do an overnight flight to get there.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry about that. But
that
is such a beautiful building. And I don't know now if I went through there or into the lobby, but we connected there once upon a time and we had a chance to look at it. And it's just such an event place, isn't it?
It is. It's really got a tremendous amount of history. And what always amazes me when I travel around the world is how much older everywhere else is than the United States.
Yeah.
So Quebec,
yeah.
I mean, they've got things there from the early 1600s and the late 1500s. And it's amazing that civilization started there. And by that, I mean buildings and streets and sanitation and things like that started far earlier than here in the U.S.
Lots to talk to you about today, and now I've taken too much of your time. Let's start with the outage, the global network or computer outage last week. What happened and what did it cost?
Yeah, so CrowdStrike, somebody up there uploaded a bad piece of code, and it took down basically the world, especially if you're in the transportation industry. I think there were over 5,000 commercial airline flights disrupted worldwide. And not only that, Delta is having a very difficult time, almost the way that Southwest was last year around Christmas and Thanksgiving. They're having a very hard time getting everything back up. So today, I think over 1,000 flights again were canceled with them as they try to get employees and airplanes in the right place to restart their operations. And that stuff really costs people money. Airlines were offering sort of their coupons. Hey, here's a $500 coupon that you can use. But in fact, they're all supposed to give you cash back, according to the federal government. And so there's a big cost there. We're also seeing for other companies, like in the banking industry, things were down on Friday. If you had a closing, you were closing on a house, your money may have taken a while to get transferred.
Wow.
Yeah.
Elise Glink joins us from Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. We were talking just before the break. I asked you about should I build a new house or should I buy an existing house? Where's the best value?
Well, right now, strangely, in most of the country, buying a new house is cheaper than buying an existing house on a per square foot basis. Plus, the house is new, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
And typically that means you have fewer repairs in the first few years. So Zillow did a nice amount of research, and what they found is that new homes are selling for $3.50 less per square foot than existing homes. That was in May. That is the largest discount in at least 6 years. And the places where that's happening, San Diego, which is wildly expensive right now, by the way, Salt Lake City and Los Angeles, those are offering the biggest discounts. So those three cities, San Diego, the discount on a new house to a comparable existing house, $57.10 cheaper to buy a new home
per square foot. Yeah.
Than an existing home. Salt Lake City is $53 and Los Angeles is $52.
So for 1,000 square feet, that would be $57,000. You're going to get a 2,000 square foot home. That would be $114,000. And that's just for 2,000 square feet. That's how much you would save, which also tells you how expensive that house must be.
Yes. Well, all houses are expensive right now, but the idea that you could get a new home for less and a significant amount less, to pay $57 a square foot less, is not a small number. Now, you get to a place where things equalize, Louisville, Kentucky, about the same, and then you get to Atlanta, and it's more expensive to buy a new home than an existing home. And Chicago, the differential is about almost $17 per square foot. It's more expensive by about $17 to buy a new home in the Chicago metropolitan area than to buy an existing home.
It's kind of enticing to say, oh, good, then I'll buy, and I presume that includes the cost of the lot then, but I'll buy a lot.
Yep.
But then you've got to find a builder, and you've got to wait for him to build it. And I don't know, I've got friends that are getting a bathroom redone, and it's taken months longer than they thought it would for a bathroom. I can just imagine that that's part of the equation for people. I'd rather move into a house built and pay more than go through the hassle of building a new home on my own.
Well, this, just to put your mind at ease, this is actually for all new construction homes. Most of those that they look at are actually built by builders. So you're buying off the plans as opposed to having to go find a builder to build it after you bought the lot.
Okay, but is that house built? It's brand new and built?
Yes, although people are buying them off the plans. So you see a model home, mm-hmm. and then you see a subdivision that's going up. You go in and you pick
your lot.
You pick your lot, you pick your blueprint, and then they build the house.
And then they build it for you. Fair enough. And then in Chicago, that's still a better option price-wise than buying an existing home?
Actually, Chicago's the flip side. So it's cheaper by about $17 to buy an existing home, $17 per square foot, than it is to buy a new house. And just to point this out, in San Jose, new homes are so much more expensive than existing homes. There, it's $216 per square foot cheaper to buy an existing home than new construction.
Problem in either case is finding the property to begin with. There's still a dearth of inventory, right?
Yeah, we're still really not having a lot of homes for sale. Homes are selling very, very quickly in Chicago. Anecdotally, we're seeing the hardest market right now is actually River North. So condos in River North are taking a little while to sell. Streeterville. But if you're looking in the neighborhoods, Lakeview and Lincoln Park and, even west, south, homes are selling faster than you can imagine. And we are seeing homes go above list in the Chicago area. And so even though we have had a very moderate rise compared to some of the other places around the country, we're still seeing, homes selling quickly. We're also getting more reports of people who are sellers, or owners, I should say, who are getting letters from people saying, please, would you sell me your home? I really want to move to your neighborhood. And these are people who don't even have their homes on the market.
If you're paying over the ask, then if the house doesn't appraise beyond the, say, list price, then you've got to come in with more cash, right?
That is correct. And it is a problem when homes don't appraise out in value. Then you have to go back to the seller and try and renegotiate, or you have to bring more cash to the table. And when homes are moving as quickly as they have been moving across the country, you do see that cause a little bit of a problem, because sometimes the sales don't register quickly enough in the systems that the appraisers use to appraise them, and they have to close. And in some parts of the country, homes are still jumping up in price so quickly that there's a disconnect. In Chicago, I think I haven't heard of a lot of stories of homes not appraising out in value. And hopefully that won't be a problem for any of the buyers out there.
Are they building bigger homes, smaller homes, medium-sized homes? It seems to me like there is an interest in these young people who have been aced out of the real estate market, either because of inventory or interest rates, who would like to buy a house and maybe a smaller house, especially if they're younger and maybe have a small family or no kids yet, would accommodate them. What's happening there?
Well, we are seeing homes shrink in size, and that's for all the reasons that you just mentioned. People have less to put down. They've got a higher interest rate to contend with. Their dollars aren't going as far as they went 5, 6, 7 years ago. So we are seeing homes get built smaller, but people want open floor plans. They want to feel like there's enough room. They're cutting down the size of the bedrooms. They're cutting down the number of bathrooms. They're trying to put their money, the builders are trying to put the money into the spaces that people will value the most. And so it's an interesting shift we're seeing. We're also starting to see, and I can talk about this next week if you like, we're starting to see more and different opportunities for 3D printed homes coming to the market to try and bring more value for people's dollars.
Let's do talk about that next week. That's Elise Glink from Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. You can always click on thinkglink.com. Okay, Elise, welcome back.
Hey, thank you, John.
Jim Dahlke frequently joins us, the Director of Communications at Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative, to talk about the tech scene and the funds that that fund them. Thanks for joining us again, Jim. How are you?
Hey, John. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk about quantum computing in Illinois, but before we get to that, let's do talk about the money that funds these various projects. There's a new report about where the money is coming from and where it's going. What is that?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, John, a recent report from P33, which is this local Chicago nonprofit that aims to boost the city's reputation as a tech sector. It's led by a handful of notable folks in the tech and startup sector here in the city. Its report found that early stage startups aren't exactly pulling in the local capital that they could be. Their report looked at venture capital into Chicago startups from 2014 to 2023. Only about 15% of the early stage capital that involved a Chicago investor was invested locally. That means basically all the deals that were getting done that included a Chicago investor, the vast majority of that was actually going into the pockets of startups not based in Chicago. You compare that to San Francisco, where about 44% of the money invested by San Francisco investors is going to the Bay Area. Not surprising, of course, a huge concentration of startup activity in the Bay Area. But when you look at some similar cities to Chicago, Austin, for example, 21% of local investors were cutting checks into Austin-based deals. In Boston, that was 26%. In Seattle, it was 32%. So I think, you know, what one thing that this group, P33, found is that, you know, they're hoping to see more local Chicago investors cutting checks into Chicago-based startups.
I wonder what to make of that. I mean, I suppose if the money is in Chicago, maybe that angel knows some of the local entrepreneurs who he might fund. But it does seem to me in this digital age, it's just as likely he would fall in love with a company outside of Chicago too, right? We'll put it this way. What would the fix to that be then?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question because the investors are looking for a return on their investment. So certainly Chicago is going to be a place that venture capitalists look to who are based here to make an investment. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're trying to return, you know, capital back to their limited partners, to their investors. And so certainly they're going to expand their scope beyond just Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and flip it on the other side is, you know, we talked to a founder, you know, a founder of Chicago, and I talked to a founder in this story that you had mentioned that a lot of investors here locally were valuing their business at a smaller amount. So the startups themselves turned higher valuation, potentially Bay Area investors. So it could be, you know, on the startup side, just deciding to go with an investor out of town.
Talk to me about the idea that one of the communities that's not participated in this fully are people of color, and what's being done about that.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that P33 found specifically is that Chicago is actually doing a pretty decent job in terms of increasing its investments into historically overlooked founders. So founders of color, female founders. You know, Chicago is increasing its investments into overlooked founders from 2014 to 2023 compared to other metros that actually are seeing declining opportunities for these investments. So, you know, more money going into founders of color has certainly been a big topic for Chicago for years and years. And it's interesting to see that that's now on the rise. You know, that comes on the heels of a national coalition that's actually asking senators to support entrepreneurs and investors of color through a couple of bills that are in the works. So this group is looking to the U.S. Senate Banking Committee to support a pair of bills that would help boost access of capital for founders of color. The bills do a couple of different things. One, it looks to increase the cap on the number of owners and the size of angel investor funds. So these angel funds right now can be owned by up to 250 people and manage about $10 million in capital. This group is calling on this bill to actually double the cap on ownership and increase the funds to about $50 million. So in theory, this would allow more investors of color to take part in angel funds and invest more of this money into Black and Brown founders. So hopefully that just gets more money into the hands of Black and Brown founders, both Chicago and nationally.
You frequently talk about quantum computing and where Illinois is on that scene with the University of Illinois and U of C and so forth. We're players, right? What's going on there?
Yeah, so after missing out on federal funds in the recent round of the Biden administration's Economic Development Tech Hub program, a local quantum initiative has taken some major steps forward last week. Governor Pritzker announced last week that the state is partnering with DARPA, so the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, to establish a quantum proving ground program in Illinois. Illinois is going to commit $140 million in matching funds for this quantum campus that's yet to be determined on the exact location, but it'll be in Chicago or outside in greater Illinois. And really, this is going to be kind of a proving ground for different types of quantum computing prototypes that are going to be tested here. This is going to create lab space, including like cryo facilities, lab equipment, collaborative space for both private companies and Illinois research institutions. And so we've kind of been hearing this slow drumbeat of quantum momentum here locally. It's a big priority for the Pritzker administration. And folks here in Chicago really believe that quantum computing can kind of be, this really next big tech wave here in Chicago. So this program with DARPA could be the next step forward.
But the Department of Defense, Would they be funding then weapons research, or would it be into a whole host of areas?
Yeah, in terms of the specific investments, it's not totally clear at the moment, but I think really, the title here, the Quantum Proving Ground, I think is really the key takeaway. That we're really kind of establishing the base layer of, like, can we establish the infrastructure for quantum computing here in Illinois, kind of really lay the foundation for providing the lab space, providing the equipment, providing the space for just this technology to get off the ground, and both connecting the work that's being done at the local kind of science and research institutions alongside commercial public companies as well.
I was listening to a podcast discussion about the nature of weaponry and how sophisticated it is getting because of drones and because of computer the sophistication of computers and AI. And one of the things they said is that now we know that a drone can go up and you can remote control, watch what the drone will hover over with the camera. And then you can decide if that's an enemy or a target. And then you can deploy bullets or bombs. You can, without having to actually as a soldier go there, you can have the drone do it. It's more and more robots will be participating in combat. But the new twist was that you can hit launch on that and the drone itself will decide if that's a viable target. So the AI is assessing and killing or not killing. It'll be out of the hands of a human being in real time, which is fascinating and kind of chilling, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, and we're really seeing Silicon Valley investing in defense tech. We're seeing lots of startups kind of enter this space. Kind of really the one major one is called Anduril. This is a defense tech startup developing weaponry, the kind of drones you're speaking about exactly. And this is led by Palmer Luckey, the former founder of Oculus, the headset company. And So Anduril is really one of the kind of movers and shakers in this space. But we're seeing lots of startups enter the defense tech space and capturing venture capital dollars.
Well, you could actually see somebody with the headsets on like a toy, only now it's not a game. And in this case, not only could a soldier, say, with a headset thousands of miles away, determine life or death or target or no target, but you might actually turn it over to the machines. It sounds like something Isaac Asimov would have come up with, but it's getting closer and closer to reality. Jim Dahlke is the Director of Communications over at Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative. We'll talk next week. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, John.
And we've got more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Chicago-based medical equipment company will acquire an artificial intelligence software business to enhance its innovation around AI. GE Healthcare Technologies is buying Intelligent Ultrasound Group for a reported $51 million. Intelligent Ultrasound uses AI to improve analysis of medical imaging. The technology helps medical professionals improve workflow, reduce repetitive tasks, and simplify exams. Artificial intelligence in healthcare is being used to reduce manual tasks so doctors can spend more time on patient care. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And now with the business of food, there's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and look who's back. $25 bidder now, $30, 30, will you give me 30 minutes? Leroy Van Dyke from way back when, but maybe you like Chicago's very own Steve Goodman's version. $30 bidder now, 35, will you give me 35? The real-life auctioneer we call on from time to time is...
Dan Sullivan, Sullivan Auctioneers. We are a big iron company.
Yeah, the last time Dan was on with us, he told us how he brought the gavel down on a record-breaking $30,000 an acre for Illinois farmland.
Yeah, we did, Steve. I guess that's been about a year ago, hasn't it?
It has, and we'll see where prices are today after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, last year, Dan Sullivan sold a piece of Illinois farmland for $30,000 an acre.
Nobody was really expecting that.
Well, over the past year, prices for corn and beans and other commodities have been stuck in the mud, and farmers aren't spending money, and farmland is not bringing those eye-popping numbers.
Yeah, I'd say that same farm today was, I don't think it would bring $30,000.
How much would you guess?
I'd say in the mid-20s.
But it's always been a matter of supply and demand, and the thing about farmland is, we've heard over and over again, they're not making any more of it. In fact, we're losing farmland each year.
The interest is there. There's still a lot of demand. People still want to own the dirt.
And the most recent survey by the Farmers National Company shows the I states are holding their own.
When we talk about Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, we haven't seen much downturn.
Paul Shattuck is VP of real estate for Farmers National, which is...
We're an agriculture real estate brokerage company, and our main line of business is actually farm and ranch management for absentee landowners.
Oh, okay. So if, I mean when, I win the lotto and I want to buy a ranch, you're the company to call?
Yep, we're the guys.
I will keep your number handy. And back to auctioneer Dan Sullivan.
I sold it, $30,000 an acre.
And the late Steve Goodman.
I'm the 25, will you give me $30?
They have something in common, leukemia, which Dan will talk about tomorrow. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.